Large and KPFT Radio. Cheers, y'all.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
It is 5 p.m. Thursday, time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and you're going to find it only here on Houston's community station, listener-sponsored KPFT. I'm Hank Rubicek, producer and tonight's host, and every week, along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on storytellers who take us on journeys through windows of their souls. Well, spring has sprung as we kick off our spring fun drive, asking you to help support two essential things: the power of listener-sponsored corporate-free radio and an eclectic program inventory that accompanies it, where diverse groups are represented and a variety of music is served up every day by DJs who drop needles on songs you're only going to hear on this station. And this award-winning show, So What's Your Story?, an icon in community radio, where we showcase ordinary people with extraordinary stories to tell. We're the only show that does it, and we've been doing it since 2008. We want you to keep us keeping those special platforms on the air by giving us a call at 713-526-5738, jam KPFT with your donation, or go to www.kpft.org. Donations, select a form of payment as long as it's not my credit card, and then we want you to scroll to So What's Your Story as a show that you would like to support. You know, there's been over 600 storytellers who've delivered stories about everything from meeting your father for the first time, first kisses, bad dates, loss, jubilation, reaching goals, plummeting to new lows. A mother telling us for the first time the story of her daughter's murder. A prisoner learning that he was acquitted and off death row. Embarrassing flashes, memorable moments frozen in time and ready to thaw through a story. And then the traditional stuff: Grimm, Andersen, Melville, Twain, fables and folk tales and legends and more, all meant to captivate the mind and embrace the spirit. One of the best things about this program is that it inspires our community to tell stories, especially novices, to friends and family, while sustaining our legends and lives. Like a few of my students I invited to tell stories today, actually I ambushed them, so they're a little shy, but they're just learning the art of telling, and you're going to love the stories they have to offer, and it's really a pleasure supporting them. Let's start with Kendrick Harris. He's a senior fine arts major. Kendrick, how do you want to use your fine arts in your career?
I'm going to create graphics for all these different companies. I want to be a professional graphic designer and hopefully can keep learning animation. We'll have some of my own animation studio to finally produce all these ideas that I have.
Yeah, and you got a lot of them. And I love this, Kendrick, because, you know, some people think, fine arts, how can you make a living doing it? Well, you know, the creative mind can do a number of things. There is no such thing as a major that isn't marketable if you kind of put your mind and skill set to it. Now, you have a seasonal story, one that can spell fun or strike pain in our hearts. Prom, right? A four-letter yes. word, one that we can use on radio. And let's find out which one it did for you. Tell us your story.
It's springtime, spring semester, and for a lot of high school seniors, it's prom season. But it almost wasn't for me. My senior year was going great, and I was fine with just hanging out with my friends, getting to know my teachers, and interesting assistant principals better, along with preparing for graduation in college, of course. But I was going to just keep working on my YouTube channel as well, along with the fact that I didn't have a date or had anyone in mind to go with. But I knew that going to prom would be an unforgettable memory. So now I'm keeping that last night of fun in mind while I'm pre-ordering my ticket for the masquerade ball themed prom, even more interesting, because there is only a couple of days left before the prom. Regarding who I would go with, first I checked with my buddy Isaiah, since going with a giant group of friends would be perfect prom domination. But most of my other friends weren't going, and I didn't really hear back from Isaiah. So the possibility of going with one of my sweetest classmates named Melody came a push for me to ask her. We were in U.S. government class together, and I came from my back row seat all the way to her front row seat and just suddenly asked her if she was going to prom. She quietly just responded, no. And I just responded, okay. Walked back to my seat, because again, I'm going to dominate prom. So it's perfectly fine with, even if I have to do it on my own and see everyone there finally. After I got my ticket, I went to my local suit shop called Suit You to get measured for my suit. That was pretty well priced, as you know, they should be. And to my surprise, some friends that I haven't spoken to since we started high school was also preparing, getting their suits, and now we can reconnect while we're getting these ties. I was getting a light blue one that matched with the handkerchief. We got everything that was perfectly dressed, like these dress socks and everything. So we chatted it up even more while we were getting everything. And then we finished the preparation spree. We're turning back to each other, subtle pointing. See you there. Now, got another pleasant surprise when I find out that the prom is going to be at the Sugarland Marriott Town Square. It was really, it was more luxurious than basic going into the gym. Oh, wow, that's how they moved the bleachers. So it's amazing that it's going to be at this, you know, this unexpected, beautiful venue. Ever since I focused on going to prom, this is my final high school night with everyone having a ball and connecting with each other in a more fun way than you do on a regular school day. About a week later, the day is here, and everyone going to prom is gearing up for who's going to be prom king, prom queen. Well, I'm just passing by those posters, like when they have army recruiters and college recruiters come over. I was really fine. But just seeing who's going to be prom king and prom queen. Not that I wouldn't want to be helpful, but I just didn't really think about it. Now the school day is over. The hours pass to put on the suit, take pictures with my mom and sister before the night truly begins. First, I arrived at the Marriott Town Square. I was caught off guard by how grand all of my classmates were in their one night only duds. Like, it just doesn't dawn on you how different and spectacular this night now is. Yeah, and with my already chill expectations, I was greeted by my algebraic reasoning teacher, who's presently at attention, real pleasantly, instead of scrounging around her desk, trying to get everything for class and get us to come up and do this next problem on the overhead. So it's really nice to talk to her for just a little bit before I valiantly walked into the ballroom, picked up some treats, sat at my chosen table or hub for the night where I sat with a good amount of friends. Yes, we took all the unforgettable pictures. I danced like I was on center stage because this is my final high school night. It's huge, so I'm taking charge. And I'm so glad that nothing could stop the fun that I had with so many of my friends. And interesting, more and more increasingly interesting teachers, especially for being on the fence about going to prom in the first place, it truly ended up being a night to remember.
Great. Okay. Sounds like a night to remember. At least you were able to rent your stuff, right? Women can't. They have to buy something and they can only wear it once. So you're a little lucky. Yeah. I had a terrible prom. So many people did. And I won't get into all the specifics because it's pretty obnoxious. But many of you may not know, or maybe you do know, the actress, Deborah Winger. Does that ring a bell? Anybody? Terms of Endearment? Yeah. None of you do? None of you do. You're much too young, and that's disgusting. But take a look at her. She's a very, very reputable actress. She was in Terms of Endearment. And when I was at prom, she went with a friend of mine. She's 2 years younger than I am. And I had a terrible date. And I'm sitting at a table, and I see her there, but I didn't know who she was. She was just a chubby girl interested in theater. That's all she was. And she's looking at me and she's kind of, nudging me over, and I'm trying to be polite. So I go over to her and I'm thinking, oh my God, what does she want? And she says, I see that you're not having a great time and neither am I, and you're kind of cute. And I was wondering if you might want to dance. And I said, not really, but thank you for asking. Well, in case you do, or in case you want to call me, she writes her phone number down on a cocktail napkin. I go, okay, thank you very much. And of course, on the way out, I kind of roll up the cocktail napkin and throw it away. One big mistake, I could have become, Mr. Winger. In any event, yeah, so prom is always, always an interesting thing. What does it signal in a person's life? In just a couple of seconds, Kendrick, what does it signal?
A transition from one important time of a person's life, high school, defining what do you want to do, for instance, that you mean high school, to now, going forth and pursuing what you want to do with college, meeting new people. Yeah, so it's really just, and prom particularly, it's just like one final big night or hurrah, if you will, of being in high school with those friends and interests before not going in college and seeing what happens there.
Right. I wanted everybody else to kind of chime in, but we're going to do it creatively. Is there one word that describes your prom night? Think about it. One word. Eric, have you got one? If you don't have one, it's okay. Maybe you didn't go. Have you got one word?
Farewell.
Farewell. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Pilar, do you remember yours? You're a little over the age of 20 like me. So I was wondering, do you remember yours, right? You don't have one in mind? It's okay. You don't need one. The happiest people I know never went to prom, so don't worry about it.
I did go. And actually, yes, I did. And then just quickly to say that I didn't have nobody in mind, but my sister helped me arrange someone. And it happened.
Hey, that makes life. It was good? Was it nice?
Oh, it was very nice. I was very impressed. Actually, he was in the military school and he was well-mannered. I was very impressed.
Let's go with the word impressive. Yeah, maybe that's the answer. Let's be set up. Don't choose your own date. That's the answer. Sua, have you got one, a word that comes to mind?
I think for me it would be like eventful or accomplishment.
Accomplishment, interesting. Yeah, Hannah, Finney, have you got one?
I would probably say celebratory. I went with a big group of friends, so it was just a big party for us. Nice.
Oh, there's somebody there you gotta like, right. Hannah, Dejani, have you been to a prom? Have you got one word in mind?
I didn't actually go.
Yeah, that's why you're sane. That's why you're fine. That's why you're good. Prom can do crazy things to you. Yes. Okay, so let's go from prom to pride. How's that? Sua Cruz, tell us your year and your major. Tell us, what are you majoring in?
Hello, I am a senior and my major is corporate communications.
Corporate communication, right. And for our listeners, it means using communication within a corporate sector, organizational communication, training and development, public relations, all that sort of stuff. Very good. Now, before you tell us your story, what inspired you to tell this particular story without giving it away? It deals with pride, but what is it about pride that motivated you to tell this story?
I believe what inspired me is that life can be really unpredictable.
Yeah.
But even through those unexpected moments, life can be also full of wonderful surprises.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great preliminary statement. It's unpredictable. And pride does fit in, as we're about to learn in your story. Tell it to us.
Speechless. For once in my life, I was left speechless. Growing up, many of us are set our standards and life expectations to those of our parents. Many of us dream of making our parents proud. So as I grew up, that was my dream, to make my father proud. He was a man of very little words and emotions. I always tried to be the perfect everything just to hear those words come out of his mouth and say he was proud, but I never did. I remember when I was about 14 or 15 years old, my father had made a comment that he was happy for me and was proud to be my father, but never the words, "I'm proud of you." I recall that every decision I made, I always thought to myself, if my dad knew, how would he react? Luckily, this saved me from many bad decisions, but it also raised me hopeless, thinking that I would never be good enough for my father. One day, my mother asked me why it mattered so much to me to hear my dad say those words. I remember telling my mom that I didn't know how to explain it, but just knowing that dad was proud of me meant the world to me. As the years passed, my brothers and me had lost hope to ever hear those words from my father. My brothers would always tell me that if anyone would hear those words in this lifetime, it would be me, since I was my dad's favorite. But they also knew that I always had it harder than they did. And then life threw me a curveball that I wasn't expecting, that ultimately changed my life. It was a bright and sunny morning. The wind was blowing. It was fresh and beautiful. And we were all rushing, getting ready to leave. I remember the nerves that I felt, especially having my whole family there. After 6 years, I could finally say, "I'm going to graduate." It was the day of the ring ceremony at the University of Houston downtown. During the event, I could just see the smile on my father's face. I could see the shine in his eyes of the tears that wanted to roll down his face as I walked across the stage to get my ring. All I could think was, man, I hope I've made him proud. Once the ceremony finished and we met up outside, my brothers hugged me and said they were proud of me. And then my mother hugged me and said she was proud of me too. And that's when I felt my heart stop. My father hugged me and his voice began to crack and said, "Eres mi más grande orgullo, mi primer orgullo, y me siento orgulloso de ti." Meaning that I was his greatest pride, his first pride, and that he was proud of me. Hearing those words left me breathless and starstruck. I felt paralyzed, not knowing what to say or do next. I remember hearing my brothers say, "Swa, you're living our dream." After that day, I felt I could have moved mountains and hit that curveball like it was nothing. I recall that moment every day, and still I'm left speechless.
Wow. What a beautiful story. So really a very, very beautiful story. You know, saying the words is so critical. We don't realize that. You know, so many people say, you know, "Of course I love you. Don't I show you?" You can show a person that you love someone. You can show a person that you're proud of someone. But there is no substitute for saying those words. There are a lot of lessons in every story. What's the one takeaway from yours?
I believe that one lesson that anyone can take away from my story is to never lose hope. And that although you may never hear those words from someone else, you should always let yourself hear them for your own.
Beautiful. So you say it to yourself if you don't hear it from someone else. But you need to hear those words told by someone. Beautiful. Wow. Another senior corporate communication major, Hannah Finney. Hannah, a question for you that I know is kind of difficult, but all of you are kind of new storytelling students, although you've ended the semester. How has storytelling helped you develop your own communication skill set?
Well, certainly as a corporate communication major, it has helped me refine my active listening skills and my speaking skills with others. But I think holistically, the most important skill gained when storytelling is the empathy that you gain from being with others.
That's a beautiful, beautiful thought. Yeah. Empathy with being with others. Because you have to be sort of unselfish, I think, being a storyteller and listening to stories. It's the other story that matters. You know, it doesn't sound very profound, but it's the other story that matters when you're listening to others, right? And that really does teach you to be unselfish and, in your own word, which is really a better word, a more practical word in this case, empathetic, empathy. Now, your story is about, I say delinquency, but that is a weird word because it sounds like you're doing something wrong, you know, like you're going to be thrown in jail. But your story kind of has to do with that. But the word mischievous is a better word, a mischievous stage in your life. Let's just say that. Tell us your story.
Well, I was a mischievous child. I was even called Snikkelfritz as a kid by my family, which is originally a Pennsylvania Dutch term, and it's an endearing term for a mischievous or talkative child. Well, I was creative and imaginative like many kids and very optimistic. And I had learned to be all of these things from my mother. And she taught me other things like value of a dollar and to be on the outlook for a good deal and, you know, to always dream big. Well, on this particular day, I convinced my mother that I was sick enough not to go to daycare. And of course, with no last minute babysitter available, that meant she was going to have to take me to work with her. My mother worked at a large office building with lots of employees, and her office was big and she shared it with three other ladies. There were cubicles. There was an empty cubicle in the accounting office where my mother would have me stay while I was sick. And there was even room under the desk for me to take a nap with my pillow and my blanket and stuffed dog that I toted around with me religiously. My mother was always prepared for everything. So she thought. I loved going to the office with my mom. She didn't know it, but I had previously hoarded a copious amount of office supplies. I had a huge mountain of paper clips and rubber bands and pencils and pens tucked away in every empty crevice of every drawer. Markers and highlighters in every color, just some of the prized items I had collected previously on sick days, allowing me to stash my treasured collection in my cubicle. It was all mine. As long as I was quiet, I could play with all the paper and highlighters I wanted and other office treasures. I would doodle and draw and write lists and write my name over and over and over again. I would try my signature with hearts and stars and with flowers, and I would color little clouds, and I would sign my name in pink, and I would sign my name in blue, and I would even sign my name in pink and blue, just looking for the perfect signature to express myself. Well, on this particular day at the office, I had this brilliant idea that I was going to make some money, and boy, did I have a fabulous way to do so. So I began. I got to cutting and taping paper and scissors, and I crafted a paper tray that had a little paper sash fastened around my neck. And I had a paper cup that was taped to this flimsy contraption. And inside the cup, I had carefully placed one on top of another, my meticulously signed autographs. And in my opinion, they were just perfect. And my plan was going to work great. I decided to start with the ladies in the closest proximity to me. And I waited for my mom to step away to make my move. I went around from desk to desk, giving my sales pitch to any employee that would listen to me. Would you like to buy my autograph? I have it sale right here, 25 cents today. You should buy it now because it'll be worth something someday. I'm happy to say that I made about $1.75 that day. And while that was about 20 years ago and a lot of things have gone up in price, if you're still interested, you can buy my autograph for a discounted price today.
All right. Your favorite store must be Office Max. Is that your favorite store? Yeah, you must love that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, I love stationery.
Yeah, I love stationery. Yeah, that's great. Now, Pennsylvania Dutch. I didn't catch that the first time that you told. Are you Pennsylvania Dutch? May I ask? Are you?
My grandfather came from Pennsylvania Dutch. His parents moved down here to Texas, and he's the first Texan. Yeah.
That is fascinating. I didn't catch that. That is so fascinating. Now, you know, there are lessons in every story, but there's also wisdom. And I think that your story sort of triggers the thought of wisdom more than anything else. What wisdom should we as bona fide adults gain from your story?
Oh, it's certainly to maintain that childlike, mischievous, and optimistic nature. that keep dreaming as big as you were dreaming when you were a kid. Because you never know. Someday you'll be worth it.
Yeah, no kidding. And that is really an important, that's an important piece of wisdom, Hannah, because I can't think of a time in life, in history, in life, where hope and optimism have been more important, right? I mean, it's so important to be optimistic and be so hopeful. This is Dr. Hank Rubicek, and you're listening to So What's Your Story with my guest storytellers, Eric Gonzalez, Hannah Finney, Pilar Plazek, Hannah Dejani, Sua Cruz, and Kendrick Harris, only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM, 89.5 for our friends in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. I wanted to revisit Hannah's story for just a moment and ask all of you, what is the worst thing? This is always a fun question. We'll find out who the goody-goodies are in this group. What is the worst thing that any of you have ever done as a kid that got you into trouble? Take just a few seconds each and let us have it. Eric, have you done anything bad in your life that has gotten you into trouble? Something you can talk about?
There was this one time where I had stole $20 from my mom's purse.
Uh-huh. $20 from your mom's purse. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It didn't end well.
It did not end well. So I take it you didn't take it in order to buy her a Mother's Day gift or anything.
No. I was trying to impress a girl.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We're going to find out a little bit later. That's your MO. You like to impress girls. I don't blame you. That's okay. That's a reason. Pilar, what about you? Have you done anything worth sharing
actually,
with us?
The one I remember is actually that I remember my dad, I was around, 6 years old? Mm-hmm. And my dad sent me to buy a hot pepper around the corner. There was always a store around one in my neighborhood. And so he gave me the money. It was a big bill. I don't know, kind of like worth $10, maybe more. But when I went to the store, I remember my dad used to buy candy and give it to the kids. He was always very generous to the kids. And so I figured I could buy candy. My dad would be proud of me. And I bought it and started giving it to the kids. And I came back home and I forgot about the pepper I was supposed to buy.
Oh, you terrible, terrible person, you. Yeah,
I know. And so
You call that bad?
Yeah, well, yeah. Because that was his favorite. For my dad to be able to enjoy his meal, and he had some cast all over because he had an accident, so he couldn't go himself. So gotcha. I think that was something bad.
Okay. All right. Yeah, Hannah, Dejani, have you done anything bad?
Well, actually, yeah, I was kind of a tomboy when I were a baby.
Tomboy. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't that quiet person at all. So I remember my mom had a medicine like high on a chest of drawers. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I want to reach them. So I did set the chest of drawers as steps. Mm-hmm. I climbed up. I did reach the medicine. I did drink it all. And this is the only time when I remember my dad was super tough on me. He tried to force me to throw up, and then he immediately took me to the urgent care.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one thing that we always warn parents against. Keep your medicine out of reach unless your daughter is Hannah, because she'll figure out a way of getting it. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Sua, what about you? Have you done anything bad?
A time that I can remember that I did something bad was...
I'm so happy that all of you have been terrible in your life. That's good. You're so normal. Yeah, go ahead.
I broke the TV after my mom had told me to stop playing soccer inside the house. And so I ended up...
You were playing soccer inside the house.
Yes, and I ended up blaming it on my brother.
Yeah, and the TV was your net. I see. Kendrick, what about you?
This actually happened a couple of times.
Oh, you've done two things because you didn't know the first time. Gotcha.
To 911, actually called 911 and then sprinted to, we have this back room, literally not far from this room, actually. Sprinted to the back room. the police officer came a couple times. Well, the first time he just spoke to my mom. Second time, spoke to me. Mm. And of course, everything up here cannot be designated to getting away from trying to surprise the law and craziness. So I really talked to him the second time and stopped it. But you know, like you hear 911 and you just want to do something with 911.
Yeah. Good for you. We had a story about that in class earlier. That is something that many delinquents do. We're going to use the word delinquent, you terrible people, you. Yeah, I was caught smoking with three of my friends in junior high by our assistant principal. He gave us a year detention. We had to show up to school an hour early. I forget what I told my parents. I don't even remember, but it was really embarrassing. Okay, so we're all bad people. Thank God. Now, this is our spring fund drive, and your donations don't just mean something, everybody. They mean everything. We are entirely listener sponsored, and your donations promise that this station, Houston's community station, will stay a part in this city's landscape. A Pacifica affiliate, KPFT's mission is to maintain an open and trusting relationship with the people of Houston and its broadcast vicinity. The kind of freedom of expression conceived by Lewis Hill in 1948 during the peace movement is what your pledges reinforce and support, not to mention the real fun, great stories that we're listening to today. Programmers are never paid for their creative efforts, but you don't tune in and say, well, what a terrible show, but what do you expect from people who aren't paid? You expect quality shows, you expect excellence, ones that enrich your life, and we provide just that. But we need your help, so I'm asking you to give us a call at 713-526-5738 with your donations, or you can go online if you're not into the phone, www.kpft.org. Listen, I know times are difficult. That's not just a cliche. I know it's true, and they have been for a while. If this isn't a good time to pledge money, then do me a favor. Tune in every week. Embrace the art of storytelling. When things get better, I know you're going to help out when you can. That's what our city does. That's what our listeners do. But stay with us, and we're going to love you for it. If you can help, do. And you can't rely on the next person. You've got to make it work ourselves. This show is a storytelling institution, but there's a lot going on in town that proves the resurgence of storytelling as an art and science. Our sponsor, for example, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is a terrific place to tell stories and meet the nicest people around. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The next story swap is May 24th. So visit their website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for the Zoom link to that swap and all their story swaps. I want to tell all my students right now, you're invited to come to these swaps. You'll love it. You would also be astonished by all the outstanding tellers in our state. Don't take my word for it. Just check out the Tejas Storytelling Association or take your skills to the next level and become a member of the National Storytelling Network. Our friends at the Moth are packing them into Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month for their theme-centered story swap. Don't miss this venue, and make sure that if you decide to go, get your tickets online because they sell out real soon. And please visit us, our show on So What's Your Story at facebook.com/So What's Your Story. And if any of you have any suggestions for guests, please text me at Dr. Hank with your ideas at 832-277-1581. Guest ideas, 832-277-1581. Hannah Dejani is a senior. She's from the Middle East, and she has a story of everyday drama most of us could never fathom. Hannah, without giving away the story, what inspired you to tell this one?
It's fight for your life, no matter, like sometimes life does not give you options and you find yourself in a position, whether you do it that way and risk it or you're gone.
Right. It's really a great story about decision-making, if nothing else. Tell us your story.
It was Thursday morning. we all had to wake up at different timing to go to work. Usually my sister is the first to wake up and leave. 15 minutes later, she was back with the shocking news of the invasion of the country. She started to describe for us how the roads are surrounded with tanks, soldiers, army sandbags, and arsenals. I was born in that country. I have so many memories. I went to school, I worked. The huge change of that situation was so frustrating and scary. Change does happen, but it was too much for us to handle. Many of people decided to leave or escape, or they were evacuated by the government. We were the ones who decided to stay and fight for the last minute. Following the international news, as well as professionals of experiences and people who were living the same situation, they decided or they notified us that the withdrawal from the country is not gonna be easy. And he might be using missiles along with burning oil tanks and wells, and it's not gonna be peaceful. Based on a previous experience my mom and dad had, we did sit around my mom and we were preparing a mask with coils. So this would prevent us of the biological missiles or toxic. The day, December the 2nd, I was helping my mom baking bread and preparing something for lunch. I remember my dad came to the kitchen and he said they did announce that one of the stores is open for groceries. I don't know what happened at that moment. I just had a sign or something from God telling me that I have to go with him. I was so much attached to my dad, and literally every place he used to go, I would love to go with him. I was begging him, crying, trying my best to make him allow me to go. And he just was so scared to take me, which I understand as a father. He does not want to risk his daughter outside with such a situation. I had one shoe in my hand and the other shoe was in my leg, and I was behind him running very fast to the car so he doesn't find an excuse that I was late. I went with him. The store wasn't so far. It was like a couple of miles away from home. Everything looked so fine at that time. The store wasn't like a real grocery store. It was like a couple of things on the shelf. And we did actually do it so fast and everything looked good. Until we walked out from the store place and we were surprised with a very huge orange buses like lining up. The soldiers were not a lot. They were a couple of soldiers and they looked so tired, so exhausted. And they were kind of doing the job, just obeying orders without the desire. They lined us all up. It was so scary, so frustrated, very understandable. We did not know what's going on until we figured out that they are lining up to be as a prisoners of war. I don't know how I felt at that time. Everything, like my brain freezed, every bad thought came up to my mind. I was remembering my brother in the United States. I was remembering my mom and sister, how they will be left alone. What is gonna happen to us? Are they gonna kill us? Are they gonna arrest us? Are we gonna be in a jail where the country is, or they're gonna shift us to another place? It was so scary. While we were lining up, all I could see, my dad's mouth was mumbling with prayers. He had tears in his eyes and he were looking at me like in a blame or a guilt. Why did I bring her with me? It was so hard for me to see my father, like very emotional. All I could remember at that minute, my dad was whispering, Hannah, we have to escape. We have to success this. It is unknown faith. We either do it or we are done. I did not know what to do. I wasn't sure if my dad wants me to start something or he wants me to run away, or I did not understand. After a while, I felt my dad giving me his car keys from behind of, like we were like arrested and our hands were behind our backs. So I didn't understand that I had to do the first step. Little by little, the line was so crowded and we were closer to the car. I ran to the car. At that time, the cars were only key starters. So I did go to the car and I did start the car. I was so scared. My body was frozen. My brain was so tired and so exhausted and I couldn't predict what's gonna happen. Are they gonna kill me? Are they gonna kill my father? And I'm gonna be the reason that I lost my father because I wasn't fast enough or I didn't do the proper thing. Everything was a nightmare at that second. This second did go like years. I felt every second with so much fear and so much scaredness. I heard the door opening. I couldn't look up because I thought they came after me. I did not realize it might be my father, and I did not want to look up because I don't want to be finding unexpected situation. I heard the car moving. It was my dad. I lifted my eyes up. I told him, are they chasing up us? He said, not yet. And I could feel the car was speeding so fast. We heard bullets, and they were many. All I could remember, my dad putting his hand on my head and pushing me down towards the floor. He said, don't come up until I tell you everything is fine. And it was like 4 minutes away from my home. They were 4 years of my life that I could not forget. They were so long. I remember we did make it safe, but I had to get over it for years. It was so tough, so scary. And it was an action movie that we were the directors and we were the actors.
Wow. Very intense and so devastating. So devastating.
Thank you.
In just a few seconds, what is a new insight that you want us to have after listening to this story, a new insight about life? It's a hard question, I know.
Sometimes you don't have a choice of taking enough time to do a decision. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a fast decision, though usually a fast decision is so wrong, but mm-hmm. at some moments of your life, you have to do it.
Oh, so wonderful. Wonderfully put. Native Peruvian Pilar Plasek has returned to school after a few years. And Pilar, what have you found to be most challenging about coming to school as an older adult? Not old, as an older adult. Notice I'm saying that, yes.
Well, I found the most challenging thing about continuing school was to be careful not to neglect my family in the process. And that is why it took me this long to finish my communications degree. Mm-hmm. And because school was like a drip of water through the years, carving my life a sculpture, and that's what I've become.
Fabulous. You have an interesting story called The Wrong Bill. Tell us your story.
Sure. I saw him parking on the driveway. And I wonder who he was. I asked him, may I help you? And he answered, I'm Bill. We just finished talking on the phone. What? I feel like falling into a hole and wanting to bury myself in it. It was one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. My husband was traveling out of town on a business trip. And he asked me to turn on the sprinklers in the front yard for the next day. And I figured there was nothing to it. The following day, after my morning routine, the faucet got stuck when I tried to open it. So as the handy wife that I am, I went to the garage and got a big wrench to help me crank it open. But I busted the whole pipe off the wall. I got wet all over and the water was shooting everywhere. And the worst of all, it got into the wall. And I began to panic. I couldn't remember where the main water valve in the house was. So I called my husband and he told me where to find it. I managed to close it. Oof. Ah, now I need to find a plumber. My husband suggested I call our good neighbor, Bill, across the street and ask him if he could help me or if he knew somebody that could. I looked for Bill's phone number and the home association roster and I found it. I called and he answered, hello? He sounded a little different than the Bill I knew. Is this Bill on Kathy Drive? I asked. He replied, the last time I checked, my name was still Bill, and I still live on Kathy Drive. Okay, Bill, hello. I need your help to fix my pipes at home. And then I continued telling him about what happened with the pipe and how the water got in the wall. Then he replied, oh, and your husband can't fix it? I went, Bill, do you think I'd be calling you if my husband was home? I need your help. Please come quickly. Okay, he said, I'll be there. I hung up. I waited and waited and wondered why he was taking so long since he lived right across the street. Suddenly, I saw a man parking his truck on my driveway and wondered who he was. I went outside and when he got out of the car, I asked, may I help you? He said, I'm Bill. We just finished talking on the phone. What? I realized then that I must have called the wrong Bill. I felt like falling into a hole and wanted to bury myself in it. It was one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. I apologized for talking to him the way I did. I told him that I thought I was talking to the neighbor across the street, my good friend Bill. But the one I actually called was another neighbor down the street. He just moved to the neighborhood. Then he said, don't worry, I can help you. Well, shortly after, my neighbor, Bill, across the street showed up. And when I told him how I called the wrong Bill, he said, oh no, you called the right Bill because I will know how to fix your pipe.
All right. Yeah, I wish people could watch you. I know this is an oral kind of thing. I wish they would watch you. Pilar has this magnificent kind of lively animation that you pay for. Bill is too common a name, much, much too common a name. And I want to get back to that if we have time, Pilar, but I want to make sure that we get another, because I'm doing too much talking. I want to make sure that we get Eric's story in first. Finally, we have a love story told by senior psych major Eric Gonzalez. Eric, you told me there was a surprising thing that you learned about storytelling. And I want to hold back on that as well. I want to make sure that we get to your story first and then see if we can get back to you guys. But you've got a story that kind of contains a complexing question. Is it love? Well, tell us your story. I don't think it's about Bill, but it's about something similar. Go ahead, yeah.
It is not about Bill. Yes.
I love that story about Bill. That would just cracks me up all the time. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
People say that being in love is a wonderful feeling, but for me, it's only ever been a thorn in my side. I first fell in love 3 months before the end of my freshman year. I was debate partners with a girl named Alva, who was a senior at the time. We made such an amazing duo. She was always determined, never afraid to tackle any topic. Me, I was always one step ahead of my opponents, always able to find and exploit a weakness in any argument. Because of how well synced we were, we began to get closer as friends and got to a point where we enjoyed each other's company and had a deep mutual trust. Now, as any normal teenage boy would, I had crushes on many girls, Alva included. And I always hated it. Crushes would be such a distraction in my life. Every thought I would have would only be on them, and I couldn't focus on or talk about anything else. So as I did with all previous crushes, I tried to ignore the feelings I had for Alva. I just kept telling myself, calm down. This isn't anything special. You've been through this before. Just keep doing what you do and the feelings will be gone. However, most of my crushes lasted about 2 to 3 weeks. But I was 2 months in and my feelings for Alva were still going strong. I was surprised, but figured we just needed some space. And since summer was right around the corner, I would just have to wait it out and the crush would be gone within a week. However, come the end of June, my feelings didn't go. On the contrary, they felt like they grew stronger. At my wit's end, I sought advice from a good friend, and he told me something I was so afraid to hear. Are you sure this is just a crush anymore? Maybe it's something more. I didn't believe him, or at least I didn't want to believe him. If having a crush could make me such a wreck, imagine how it would be if it were something more. Despite what my friend said, I continued to reinforce my belief that this was just a long-term crush throughout the rest of summer, and even through the beginning of my sophomore year. And for a while, it kind of worked. I was able to focus on other things in my life. But as I've learned now, all I was really doing was hiding my feelings away in a box of denial. And the thing about any box is that eventually it will open. One day while I was heading to one of my classes, lost in my thoughts, I heard a faint, familiar voice calling out to me. Eric, is that you? I turned and came face to face with Alva. And immediately that box of denial burst open and all those locked away feelings flooded my mind. On the outside, I seemed fine, just two people catching up. But in my head, I was going crazy. The same questions kept circling through my mind. Why? Why is this still happening? What's it going to take for me to get over you? Then, all of a sudden, I remembered the words my friend told me during summer. Maybe this is something more. Immediately, everything in my mind went quiet, except for one echoing sentence. I'm in love, aren't I?
Well, that's an awfully poignant story, Eric. You know, what is the ultimate message with this? You know, there's always a message about love from a love story, but what is your ultimate message? You got about 10 seconds. What would you say to us?
I suppose the ultimate message in this case would be try to think about things like this. Love and crushes are very distinct from each other, and it's important to think about it. But at the same time, it's also important not to deny it. If you are in love, it's important to address it.
Right, right. But you can't deny it. Yeah, but crushes and love are different. And that's something we rarely think about. And Pilar, I wanted to get back to Bill for a second, a little more upbeat, right? It's a fun story, but there's got to be a serious component to it as well. In about 10 seconds, what would that be? Yeah, you're muted.
Can you say?
About that.
Okay. Yeah, it was so bad. She didn't want anybody to hear us. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What about this Bill story?
Yeah, I would think that the seriousness of this story would be that my new neighbor could have been offended by the way I spoke to him.
Yeah.
But I am so glad he didn't, because if somebody calls me telling me things like that, I would like, what? You're out of your mind, kind of thing. But yeah. I'm happy that it didn't happen. You know.
You're a very sensitive person and a very self-conscious person in a very good way. And by the way, that is a common denominator among all of you. You know that? You're a very sensitive, very compassionate group. And it's always a pleasure to talk with all of you. It really, really is. Thank you, Pilar Plasek, Sua Cruz, Kendrick Harris, Hannah DeJani, Eric Gonzalez, and Hannah Finney for your stories from life, but more important, what newbie tellers can do and what students of storytelling can say about this prolific and wonderful art that we call storytelling. All of you are in many ways master tellers. And if you don't think you are, well, you will be sooner than you think. And thanks for all of you helping us raise a few bucks, because remember, this is our fun drive week. We kick it off today. It only takes 90.1 seconds to give us a call at 713-526-5738, JAMKPFT. I don't want anybody to move. Don't you dare move, because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a cool mix of soul. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. Join us every Thursday at 5 p.m. for So What's Your Story? We want you to keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. On behalf of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that even if the story doesn't end happily, it doesn't mean that you can't live happily ever after. Peace.
Pacifico Radio is doing what it does best.
And the rich white companies are jumping the line so they can get access to the vaccine.
Covering the global pandemic.
I think people need to wake up and recognize that this is a fight against slavery.
The working class movement against racism and imperialism.
If we have a First Amendment, it needs to extend from government to how these big tech companies are basically run by proxy in the public sphere.
And holding politicians and corporate media accountable to the people. This and much more on COVID, race, and democracy. Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on KPFT. Houston. Don't miss it.
KPFT presents Becoming Muslim.
Islam was probably the last religion I would have ever seen myself as converting
the
to.
The revolutionary, the artistic, the creative, it's all intertwined. Your spirituality can be part of your political activism.
And he said, sister, for prayer, you're going to have to move. And I said, I'm not moving anywhere.
We have to remember who we are while we walk this path of Islam.
I didn't feel like I was learning about something new.
Nowhere does it tell us to discard who we are.
Ask who believes what you heard is the truth, and you stand up.
Stories of Americans who've chosen Islam.
Join KPFT for the documentary, Becoming Muslim. Tuesday, May 10th, 4 to 5 p.m. here on KPFT.
Hi, this is Arnie Arneson, host of The Attitude with Arnie Arneson. So who is this Arnie person? Well, I delivered my first baby without the benefit of health insurance. As a young state rep, I breastfed my second kid on the floor of the legislature. I gained a reputation for talking truth to power, and in 92 became the first female nominee for governor, beating my party chairman and our five-term congressman. Today, I describe myself as a politician in recovery, but the constant in my life, my love affair with political talk. Tune into The Attitude with Arnie Arneson Monday mornings at 5 a.m. and Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9 a.m. and settle in for an edgy, eclectic hour of people, policy, and politics. The Attitude provides the facts and stories that define our lives.
There will be a celebration of life for your friend and mine, Larry Winters, on Sunday, May 15th from 2 to 7 p.m. at the Continental Club, located at 3700 South Main Street, downtown Houston. Larry was the host and producer of Spare Change every Saturday afternoon for 41 years. Larry moved on to a higher frequency last year, and we are gathering to celebrate his life and some of his favorite music performed by a few of his favorite people. Confirmed performers include Matt Harlan, Jamie Lynn Wilson, Grant Peoples, Michael Fracasso, Glenna Bell, Jimmy Pizzatola, Charles Bryant, Mark Zeus, Mason and Adam Langford, and a few special guests. Proceeds will benefit KPFT Houston and Bundles of Hope, a Montgomery County nonprofit that Larry also cared about. Suggested donation is $20 a person, but all are welcome, and no one will be turned away for lack of funds. Admission will be cash at the door on the day of the event. Once again, that's a celebration of life for your friend and mine, Larry Winters, on Sunday, May 15th from 2 to 7 p.m. at the Continental Club, located at 3700 South Main Street, downtown Houston. Hope to see you there.
I'm Robin from the membership department here at KPFT. I'm here with Julianne Malvo.
Robin, we've had the kind of conversations that you don't hear many other places. There are lots of media outlets, not as many that are as profound and pointed as the Pacifica stations. We talk about politics, we talk about race, and we talk about gender. We also talk about you and what's on your mind. Please join KPFT. The number is 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738.
Thank you, Dr. Malvo. Julianne Malvo live Monday mornings at 8 a.m. It's easy to make your donation to KPFT. Either call 713-526-5738 and do it on the phone, or visit kpft.org and donate safely and securely online. 713-526-5738 or online at kpft.org. We hope to see you there.
Hello, KPFT listeners. It's Tom Tranchilla with Songwriter Studio. Join us every Sunday at 5 to 6 p.m. right after Howlin' the Blues. We bring you local, regional, and national artist interviews and their new release album.